Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. This is a very, very special day for me. Look, I'm a kid from Georgia. My favorite bands growing up, Leonard Skinner, Southern rock bands, Blackfoot. We've got Ricky Medlock on the show today. Welcome to the show, my man. It is. I'm almost nervous starting this off. I never thought in a million years I would get to chat with one of the dudes from Skinner in a million years. I mean, you don't understand. In a Southern household in Georgia, you're everywhere, right? You're coming out of cars. People are having sex to your music.
Speaking of that,
here we go.
I'll have a great story for you in a little while. Go ahead.
You tell it right now. Let's do it.
You tell it right now, Ricky. We're starting the show off with that.
Listen to this, man. being in the band for almost all my life, I've heard probably more Leonard Skinner stories than you would ever, than you could even imagine. I mean, people from all walks of life, you know, whether it be, you know, the working man, out here, the blue collar guy, right up to, you know, presidents, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Funniest story I ever heard, man. Swear to you, hands down. At a meet and greet, girl comes through, young lady comes through the line with her, I guess her boyfriend at the time, and to meet the band, and she says, I have a funny Leonard Skinner Freebird story for you. Oh, okay. And, you know, I just thought, well, this is going to be another, you know, Freebird was played at our wedding, or Freebird was played at, you know, my Uncle Joe's home baking class or whatever. she goes, my parents was at a Leonard Skinner show back in, and I forget when she said it was, but I think it was around 96, 97, something like that. Anyway, she said, I was conceived at the end of Freebird.
When she says at the end of Freebird, she means during the outro, that's when dad blasted,
part.
Right?
You know what I mean? The fast part.
Yeah.
So I guess the faster the song got, the quicker her dad got.
Well, there you go.
You know what I mean?
He picked up the
pace. Shot. There you go, man. All of a sudden, their daughter was conceived at the end of Freebird, man. I swear to you, I'd never heard that before.
Well, I'm going to do some research on that methodology here in a little while, actually.
Well, Dan, I want to give a shout out to the guy in that, because Freebird is like a 9-minute and 18-second song, if memory serves me correct.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so that means he went for 9 minutes and 18 seconds.
Well, wouldn't you be curious to know if they started slow, you know, and it was real romantic, and, you know, if I leave here tomorrow, would you still remember me? Hell no, I've done forgotten already. And the next thing you know, they end up quick, and it's bad, boom, it's over with and done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can tell you, if they were having sex to Skinner, chances are it was reverse cowgirl, and there was some blow involved.
Yeah, and they were also in public, man. So, you know, sometimes you got to get it in quick. So I feel like you probably use the first part of the song as the foreplay. Then you penetrate.
Well, from what I understand, it was an amphitheater, you know, with the lawn seats. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So probably back at the very back of the lawn, you know, up next to the fence or whatever. I don't know. You know.
Oh, shit. It was at the show? Like they were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's what he's been saying this whole time. Did you not catch that part?
No. I caught that part, but I was like, wait. So they were in it, not like in the parking lot. They were physically in the stadium.
No. They were at the show.
Oh my God, that's legendary. So now that you brought this up, I saw two people fucking at a U2 show at Ohio State.
up in the upper decks. And I was like, man, how do you get away with this? Because there were snipers and everything up there, Dan.
Let me ask you this. Was it Sunday Bloody Sunday? Was that the song? Like what?
No. It was it would have been awesome, but
cuz they're either he likes fucking chicks on their period, or he's super into violent crime between the Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, right? It's one of those two things. No judgment. I'm just saying that's
obviously no judgment from us, but I think it was Desire. But the weird thing was, Dan, is I looked over at the snipers and they had their guns trained at them, and they were clearly just using the sights only just to watch these people fuck. They didn't say anything and they let it go.
I do that from the comfort of my own home all the time.
Do you
I don't have any binoculars. What the hell else am I supposed to do? This is America, goddammit, and that's how it works here. If you don't want me to see, pull the shades.
Even wonder when that's going to be taken away from us, right?
Oh, I know. I can't even spy on people while they're having sex in the privacy of their homes anymore. What the hell's going on in this country?
it's all gone to hell. You're Native American, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, shit, you know about your land being taken away.
About everything being taken away.
Yeah, no shit.
Believe me.
I bet.
You know, and here's the thing, man. You know something that's interesting? I'll give you a little something I was talking to my brother about. And we were talking about, you know, all the bullshit going on right now and how crazy this all has gotten to be. And he said something really interesting to me, which is pretty well right, man. I really never thought of it in this way. But, you know, in general, we all get along pretty damn good here, man. It doesn't matter color, creed, race, religion, politics, whatever. We all get along in general. We get along, you know, fairly good. Whites get along with blacks. Blacks get along with Chinese. Chinese get along with Indians. Indians get along with, try to get along with every fucking body, you know what I mean? And as soon as you stick a freaking politician into the middle of it, it's done.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
everybody starts to look at each other with a great big question mark over their head. Mm. You know what I mean?
Weird. I've got two things to say on that. One is that I have a brand called APAC. It's all politicians are cunts, and I'm very proud of that because I believe it. They're some of the worst human beings that exist on Earth. But you're certainly right about people getting along. So if you take those people from all those different ethnicities and nationalities and creeds and all this other shit, and you put them in a stadium rooting for the same sports team, for example, they will get along because they're rooting for the same thing, right? We think we've gotten to this point with intersectionality in our society where we're trying to divide ourselves down to the least common denominator. We should be looking for the greatest common factor. What is the one thing that you will unite large groups of people? You know what I mean? That's what we should be looking for. Right. Instead, we're looking in the other direction, and the result is obvious. Like, why would we expect it not to divide us further? It doesn't make any sense to me, but here we are.
Well,
right?
you know something, man. Look, it's no secret. I'm 71 years old now, okay? And I'll be really honest with you. I was born in the most magical times of, you know, of this country. I was born in, you know, 1950, grew up in the 50s and the 60s, the 70s, you know, and as for music, it was amazing. Music was amazing then. Freedom was amazing. I mean, I thought that we all got along pretty damn well. And then all of a sudden now, you know, I look at it and now we've come into something that this guy here, this old boy here, I don't even recognize. I don't even know, you know, I can't even remember. I can't even recognize if it's someplace I actually came from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's more than just depressing and it's more than just infuriating. It's actually embarrassing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It is embarrassing that we've allowed ourselves, this country that was organized under, look, the foundation of the country is not as romantic as everybody thinks it is. It was still a lot. I mean, look, there was a lot of fucking genocide, frankly, and then there was a lot of
absolutely
boxing out people because of their gender or race or whatever the fuck else, even their social status. If you weren't a white landowning male, you couldn't vote. But the idea that, I mean, we were the first people ever to, in our government foundational documents, say all people are created equally, right? We were the first people to straight up say that individual liberty is the most important thing that anybody could ever have. And that's the point, right? That's the point. It's not about any of the political bullshit. It's about the idea that represents what America is. And we have gotten so far away from that. I mean, it's not even that, that's not even on people's radar anymore.
Well,
yeah,
of course.
And Ricky, do you look at it, because, you know, what you were saying earlier about growing up in a magical time, do you look at it as if, like, whew, I just made it. Like, I was there for all the great years. Whatever else is going to happen, looking at it, seems pretty shitty, especially with cancel culture and everything else, which is only going to get worse. Do you look at your life and say, man, that was a pretty goddamn great time, and, you know,
no,
whatever happens after this happens?
I do. I mean, you don't know how many times I've had discussions with, you know, just the band members and my immediate family and stuff like that about how, you know, I came into a world and it wasn't perfect. I understand that. Nothing is ever perfect, okay? But when I looked around me at this country and I looked around at other worlds, and then when I was able to go and play other places and experience other countries, when I'd get back to the United States, I go, whoa, wow. You know, boy, have we got it made here, man. You know, we got it made in the shade. Now, I'm not so sure now. You know, of course, I haven't been out of this country now in quite a while since the lockdown, but, you know, from people I'm hearing from elsewhere, it's just in turmoil everywhere, all over the place. And I do feel like I got in at the right time. And, you know, something else I really believe, you know, the generation before me, you know, they were saying that the guys that marched off to World War II was the greatest generation ever. You know, they went to battle. They fought for this country, for what this country believed in. They didn't want it taken over by these other foreign, you know, lands that wanted to infiltrate their beliefs in on us. And I've watched a lot of documentaries lately during this whole COVID lockdown. And I've always been into history, but I got some history lessons even more by watching a bunch of documentaries. And I look at it and going, well, that generation ahead of us, our generation now, and the generation right behind me, there's the three generations, to me, that's the last of a dying breed. That next generation on down the line, man, I'm not even sure about.
It's certainly a good point. So you say it's certainly not perfect, and you're right about that. Even in the very beginning, it wasn't perfect. It was deeply flawed, but the idea itself, we still believe to be perfect. So when you take on a new task, if you get a new job or take on a new project, you have a plan of execution, and it is your goddamn job to make it that way. Right. It's your job and our job collectively to make it perfect, right? If you have a good plan and it gets fucked up, it's because we fucked it up. It's not because the plan was bad. So
right. We
have failed horribly. And it seems like most people aren't even trying towards that goal anymore. That is trying to figure out. So at some point it became trying to figure out your own life and feelings instead of trying to make everybody else's life and life better, right? I mean, that's the whole point of it. Otherwise, why have a country? Just go live on your own and take care of your own shit. The reason we got together in the first place was like to flex our collective will and do the best for the most amount of people. That's the whole point of government in general. And we don't do any of that shit anymore. I mean, but people are still getting conceived at Lynyrd Skynyrd concerts. So there's hope, right?
Well, sort of. Well, I went to your farewell concerts in 2018. Did you guys wrap that up? Are you coming back after COVID?
No, we got to understand something. We had just done March 7th and 8th. We had just done the first two shows of this year, which was going to pretty well I think this year and last year, 2020, that year and this year, 2021, maybe half of this year would be the wrap. Mm. Okay. Now, how are you going to tell all those people that went out and bought all those tickets? How are you going to tell those people, well, sorry, you know, yeah, you can blame it on the COVID and you can blame it on anything you want to. That doesn't make it right. Mm. Okay. What makes it right is for the band to be able to somehow get back to being able to make it right for the fans. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
I feel, you know, with us not going out and playing last year, you know, man, sitting there thinking about, holy crap, man, all these people wanted to get out, come see the band, have a good time, just let their blues go, man. And all of a sudden, they got into this whole thing to where they were strapped. It made them angry. It made them frustrated. It made them, you know, some people, you know, I even know people that got sick, that didn't have a good time with this damn thing. And I got to sitting there thinking, going, when are we going to be able to get back to playing music? Because it's going to get to a point to where people's going to need that outlet. Because we here in this country, music has always been the outlet for people to feel better, to get back together. Okay? Like he said, everybody get in one damn stadium and everybody get along for an hour and a half, 2 hours. When are we going to be able to do that again? You know, and they've stripped us of that. Okay. The world economy has been stripped of probably, I think what I read, almost $300 billion from the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And that's fucked up, man.
Yeah, it's fucked up. Jesus Christ. I didn't realize it was that. I mean, it's hard to conceptualize how much the loss is. And it's not just about, it's not just about dollars and cents. It's about all sorts of things, right? So,
all sports. There is
plenty of research that's gone on in the last 10 years or so. One, that just having music on in the background, it helps improve your cognitive function and memory, but also it helps reduce cortisol, which is a stress hormone. It keeps you from over. If you have problems with addiction, music can settle your brain down and get you away from addiction and stuff like that. It improves your memory. There's all kind of stuff, and not besides all that, the group flow states, right, that you get into. Where, like you said, get into an arena together and everybody's enjoying the same thing at the same time and that energy is there. It's meaningful to people. It makes people feel connected to other people. And when you feel connected to other people, you're way less likely to judge them or hate them or any of that bullshit.
Well, and the other thing, with Leonard Skinner, and pardon me for interrupting, man, I just got to say it. When you go to a Leonard Skinner show, because I've been to numerous, it is a fucking all-out party, and if there's hard to name better atmospheres than a Leonard Skinner live concert.
Right. Well, understand something, man. We and I mean we've witnessed it for God knows how many years, but you know, as we're coming in, it's great for us as we're coming in to the amphitheater or the arena parking lots, as the buses are coming in there, or you know, we're driving in the cars, SUVs or whatever. I mean, it does me good to see people out, you know, we call it tailgate partying, you know, where they're out and they're cooking, they brought their own grill, they've got their own drink, they're out there. They're eating, they're with family, they're with their kids maybe, whomever. They might have brought their grandma and grandpa with them. It's all a big family together. And it always made us feel so good to see all this going on. And once we hit the stage, I mean, it was on, man. I mean, it was on like Donkey Kong. You know what I mean? And for us, it just made it man, it made it so well worth staying on the road and going through everything that we normally go through, the routine every day and all that stuff, just to walk out there and see those faces smiling and going, looking at you going like, holy crap, here they are.
Seriously, it's hard. Really, it's going right. It's gonna be hard to be angry with fucking Freebird playing. I mean, honestly, if people were in a verbal argument right now, people were shouting across the room at each other, and then Freebird came on just on the radio, everybody was stuff like, oh, shit, it's fucking Freebird, man. I mean, that's kind of a goofy story, but it illustrates the power of music and how it brings people together, right? And it's,
well, I got to tell you something. You know, I never took, not one time did I ever take, going out there every night and looking at that arena and looking at everybody's faces one night, I never took that for granted. I always, you know, I had promised Gary years, many years ago, man, when I got back with the band, I promised Gary, I said, Gary, I'll be here till the very last note and Freebird is played, you know? Mm-hmm. And making that promise, I never took it for granted. You know, I always wondered, is this the last night? You know, is this the last note? And it kept going and we kept going and going. Well, on the 8th, we played, you know, and we played here in Florida up in Lakeland. And we struck that note and we already knew that the virus was starting to hit. But we went out and did those first two shows anyway. And I remember playing Freebird that night, and we ended Freebird. And I remember walking off stage going, well, has my word came to fruition? You know, has this been really it now?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you guys were one of the very few that actually did that extra two or three shows after. Like Post Malone was another guy. Ross was actually at one of those shows. He stayed, and he took a lot of heat for it too. But
he took a lot of heat.
I'm sure, yeah. But you have to balance. It's a risk versus reward. Look at the consequences, not just about the financial stuff. Look at the consequences of having people isolated by themselves. We've never been more divided as a country ever since the Civil Goddamn War. You know what I mean? There are consequences to these actions. You know, if there was any other way we could have dealt with this other than locking people indoors for months and months at a time, that should have been the first option. It shouldn't have even been a question.
Hey, guys, check this out. So you're looking at a guy with a pre-existing respiratory illness, okay? I've got basically one lung. I've got a messed up respiratory system called bronchiectasis. Well, when I got back home, my gal is up in Memphis at our other place up there. And she is up there looking over her parents who are elderly. And, you know, she was up there. Now, she sings with Kid Rock. She's one of Kid Rock's singers, Stacy Michelle.
Okay.
So she's up there. Well, on the 7th and 8th, we played, and I came home, and the band Skinner was supposed to fly to Fresno, California the following weekend and then play Reno, Nevada. Then I was going to fly back to Memphis. Well, that didn't happen, so I get stuck here in Florida. She's up there, and here I am sitting here talking to you guys today, 1 year later, and I am just now getting ready to travel up there to see her.
No way.
So I've been locked down for over a year. Okay? Over a year. And the deal about it is, and not only locked down over a year, I've been at my house with no company, no nothing. No dog, no cat, just me. But I tell you something. Thank God for FaceTime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the deal is, you learn something about your inner strength when you're in a situation like this. Because I'm watching all this news come out about this, about people with underlying health issues and underlying this, it's a big risk and it's this. Well, you sit there and you go, well, what the freak am I going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I going to do? Then all of a sudden I get to reading about all this stuff. And as the months go by, then I go, whoa, wait a minute. Am I trusting all this bullshit? You know what I mean? And I got to tell you, all of a sudden, a year later, I've learned a lot about my inner self, my inner strength. And I made it. You know, I with a doctor, with, you know, the doctors that I got, man, I'm kicking butt right now. And I'm getting ready to travel for the very first time in over a year up to Memphis. And I got my protocol down, bros. I know how I'm going to do it. I'm not worried about it. And I'm getting the hell out of here.
Have you had the vaccination yet?
Fuck no.
So let me ask you, because there's not enough data for it or anything else, or
no, I've read all the data I need to read. Let me tell you something, man. There is all these different reports. I understand that given a gung-ho, you know, they're for it. Whoa, I'm for it, man. Pump that juice in me, boy. I'm ready to go. Guess what? It doesn't keep you from getting the virus. It might keep you from getting it so bad that you won't die. Okay? That doesn't help me. How the hell is that helping me? If I got it, I still could kick the bucket. You know what I mean? I thought, you know, when you got vaccinated, it was going to keep you from getting whatever you're being vaccinated for.
Yeah.
But that ain't the case. All right? So what I'm doing is waiting a little longer. And at some point, you know, we got to wait and see what is forced on us. You know, is it going to be forced on us that we got to have the vaccine before we can get on a freaking airplane, or before we can buy gas or do all this bullshit, you know? And there, I got to tell you something, man. Half of this country's going to be ready to fight.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I hear the talk in the freaking street. I know what's going on. I hear it talking all the time. People are ready to fight, you know? How are you going to take a country? How are you going to take half of a country that's goes out here and works her ass off every day, pays her taxes, abides by the law and everything, and say, okay, guys, you got to change your way of life. You can't do this anymore. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, it seems crazy to me. And, you know, you're in Florida currently, so this begs the question, if Skynyrd was allowed to play a live concert, would you guys do it in Florida? And the reason why I ask this is the UFC just announced yesterday that they're going to have their first full live, fully sold out event, 15,000 seats down in Florida. Dana White is like, hey, UFC is back and we're having full attendance, no mask. If you had that opportunity within the next month, would Skynyrd get back together and would you feel safe enough to play a live concert in front of 15,000 people again?
Well, guess what? June 4th in Panama City Beach, we're on a festival.
There you go.
And guess what? After that, we're looking at doing 15 to 20, maybe 30 more shows before the end of the year.
Damn. Well, okay. Hopefully you'll do one of them here in Austin so we can come watch.
Yeah, are you coming out of Texas at all?
I would imagine we will. You know? I mean, here, look. I just, you know what?
I can feel your frustration through the camera.
I'm not going to, you know what I'm not going to do, man? I'm not going to bow down on my knees. I'm not going to get down on my knees and kiss nobody's ass. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to live on my knees having somebody to tell me that what I can do and what I can't do. I'm almost fully Native American. The other part of me is Scottish. And I'm like a you know, an all out and out fighting motherfucker, man. You know what I mean? I was born and raised on the west side of Jacksonville. What we did was we watched out for our own, we stood up for ourselves, and we were fighting motherfuckers. How about that? You know what I mean?
I'm into that.
And I'm not gonna live on my knees. Not gonna live on my knees to a government. I'm not gonna do it.
Certainly not. We trusted these folks for entirely too long at this point, and they've cried wolf over and over and over again, and now it's time for them to shut the fuck up, frankly.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, hey, who are you going to trust? Are you going to trust?
Man, Ricky, I want to deep dive into like all of the things. Grab a sip of water real quick. We got some sponsors that pay for this show to be on the air. So we'll knock those out. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros, 40% off the bundle package. Adjustable base, mattress, pillow sheets. You can bundle that together, get 40% off everything, or you can single it out. Go to the website and say, hey, man, I just want mattress, sheets, pillows. And then you get 30% off of that when you put the promo code Drinking Bros in at checkout. Or you can get a mattress from Ghostbed, post it on your Instagram, tag at Ghostbed on your Instagram, and then put hashtag Drinking Bros next to it, and they will send you 2 free pillows. That is going on right now. We've had about 8 to 10 Drinking Bros who have already done it in the last few days here. Take them up on that, man. Pillows are the best, D'Anthony.
I'm a big fan of pillows. Yeah, I like their, I mean, they're the only pillows I use anymore. And to be honest, as much as we travel, I really need to find a way to take one with me without looking like a psychopath on the airplane. Because whenever I see somebody traveling with their pillow back in the day, when I used to like get on planes, because we fly fucking 100 times a year, you see people get on a plane and they have their pillow with them, and you're like, oh, what can take a nap on the plane? Now I understand. You know what I mean? Now it's like,
yeah,
that's the only way this poor bastard can sleep. I don't get any sleep on the road. So maybe I should start bringing a pillow with me, honestly. And I'll get a pillowcase on it that's just my face. So if anybody else tries to put their head on it, they know that they've made a mistake.
Oh, I agree. And if you're having a nice night's sleep, you're probably taking a little CBD before you go to sleep. And that's where Feels comes in. FEALS. And that's feels.com/drinkingbros. You'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. I know this product probably better than anyone else because we actually have a subscription to it, and my wife uses it every single night before she goes to sleep.
Right.
If we don't have the Feels, then we've got a problem at my household, it is a better alternative than taking Xanax or the other bullshit that I take. I'm glad she's doing it, to be honest with you, man. Their premium CBD is amazing. We talk about you know, health and wellness a lot on this show, and Feels is the best in the biz CBD wise. And when you get it, it comes in like a fucking fancy goddamn case and pouch every single time, and you're like, yeah, well, this doesn't feel like drugs, or I'm getting like a weird Chinese bottle with symbols on it that I got from a head shop down the street. This is premium CBD that is delivered directly to your doorstep. It helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. It works naturally to help you feel better. Again, my wife uses it every single night, so I know this product like the back of my hand. I would highly recommend you use their 50% off option. And the subscription is easy, man. It just shows up at your house. It's on auto pay, and we don't think about it. Go to feels.com/drinkingbros. And then you get 50% off. Feels has got me feeling my very best, and my wife are very best. And it can help you to become a member today by going to feels.com/drinkingbros. You'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That is Feels, FEALS.com/drinkingbros to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping at feels.com/drinkingbros. Drinking Bros. Last but not least, Anthony, HelloFresh. HelloFresh. I know we talked about it yesterday. We're going to talk about it again today. My God, man. 12 free meals is what they're offering and free shipping?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like, just for yourself, if you're getting it just for yourself, that's it at a minimum 4 days worth of food for free. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's a pretty good, that's like a pretty much a week, because most people eat some kind of different breakfast, or some people only eat two meals a day and blah, blah, blah. That's about a week worth of food, like a work week full of worth of food. So that's what they're telling you. They're telling you, hey, here's our shit for a week. You know, it's free, yep, free of charge, and you'll come back. That is the presumption. Because they wouldn't do it if people weren't coming back after they give them the food, they wouldn't do it. That would be crazy, right?
Yeah, and like I said yesterday, man, this was one where we called them because, you know, we've been using it for like a year and a half before they came on the show, and I was just like, can we get a sponsorship? That'd be rad. Is that nobody can sell this better than iKings. We probably eat HelloFresh 5-6 nights a week, you know, and then have one like pizza night with the kids or whatever. The meals are easy. It takes about 10 to 20 minutes to cook. The recipes are low prep, and it's all fresh ingredients. There's a reason why it's America's number one meal kits. Go to HelloFresh.com/DrinkinBros12 and use the promo code DrinkinBros12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. I'm going to say that one more time because it sounds unbelievable, but it's totally true, man. And everybody who's hit us up is like, holy shit, I can't believe it. Go to HelloFresh.com/DrinkinBros12. Use the code DrinkinBros12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. America's number one meal kits. And it has been a lifesaver throughout this pandemic for us. Thank you, Ricky.
Are you going to trust a smart governor of your state that's going by what he thinks is best for his citizens?
Right.
Or are you going to trust Dr. Fauci?
Right. Or am I going to trust Mayor Adler here in Austin, who, you know, told us one thing and did another? Am I going to trust the mayor of Nashville, who hid the results of studies they did to show that bars and restaurants were not the super spreaders we thought they were? Are we going to trust these people that have lied to us over and over? I mean, it's
the governor of New York.
Yeah, the governor of New York's another one.
Asshole.
Well, he's got a higher kill count than I do now.
I know.
Unbelievable, that guy. So yeah, it's. I don't know why people are so ready to capitulate these days. That used to be part of the American spirit. I mean, during World War II, the Emperor of Japan, when questioned about invading the United States, like an actual ground invasion, he goes, no one will ever invade the United States because there will be a rifle behind every blade of grass. And now behind every blade of grass will be some fucking hipster with a stupid mustache who's, you know, whining about being misgendered or some shit like that. Meanwhile, China is over there running programs to make their children more manly, by the way. So if you were wondering who it benefits to attack masculinity and police and shit like that in our culture, it sure as shit isn't us. It benefits everybody else except for us. It's an insanely self-destructive behavior. You know what I mean? It's like we're standing on the edge of a glacier and we're chipping away at the edge of it, and we're standing on the wrong side. Like we're literally knocking the ice out from under us, and we're getting ready to drown pretty soon, and we don't see it.
Well, you know what, man? You know, the United States has carried a lot of people on its shoulders and on its back for many, many, many generations. And, you know, there's a great saying, who's gonna save the lifeguard when the lifeguard goes to drown?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I got to tell you something. When the day comes, you know, I just saw this thing to where, I guess what it was in New York, where they're wanting some schools are teaching the young students not to say mom and dad.
Yeah, right.
Not to call their parents mom and dad. Really? Really? Now, how, you know what, man? Come on. Is that the mark of the beast or what?
Yeah, it really is, man. Yeah, and you know, frankly, on this show, Dan and I have been all done with this bullshit forever.
Well, I was done with it before it got fucking started. You know what I mean? Like, everybody likes to rewrite history in this country, but please try to remember that even January 29th, when the major announcements started coming out about this, the one thing we knew was that fat people and people that were over 65 were susceptible to this shit, and most other people weren't having a whole lot of problems. That was why Fauci was talking about not having to wear a mask to begin with, right? Because it just wasn't, yeah. It didn't work that way. And it still doesn't work that way, and it never did. I understand what the government does. They think, because they're a bunch of elitist cunts, that these people are too stupid to take care of themselves, so we have to scare them into doing the right thing. That is a fucking sadistic way to think about governing people. And if you're doing that, man, you're fucked. I mean, there's not a greater form of malicious control than that, in my opinion. That's like, you know, it damages people's psyches, because now people are afraid. And anytime anybody's trying to make you afraid of whatever, they're trying to control you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that. That's not what America is supposed to be.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, you'd like to die on stage playing Freebird, I bet. You know, the last notes of Freebird and then kick out, rather than some COVID shit where you're just like, man, I stayed in my house for a year. I didn't get to see my girl. You should be on stage right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know what? Skinner, by hook or crook, we're going to play. You know what I mean? We're going to go out. We're going to go out and we're going to play. And, you know, the rest of whatever can kiss our ass, man. I mean, that's basically it. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back to it with the band, because the band needs to play. That's what we do. You know, the thing is, one of the reasons why the farewell tour was created, you know, Gary had succumbed to heart problems about 15 years ago, and underwent very serious, you know, surgery and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it was in 2017, you know, we thought, you know, Gary and Johnny and I had talked several times, and we thought, well, you know, maybe we should pull back from such, you know, of doing 80, 90, 100 shows a year, which we were doing. And so that's how the farewell tour, it was farewell to the all out and out staying on the road every year.
Right.
Touring. That's what it was created for. After the farewell tour, we figured that every year we would do a residency somewheres, kind of like what Aerosmith was doing.
Right.
In Vegas?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe in Vegas. Or there's a lot of other places that are doing it, like the guys down at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino there in South Florida. They had talked about us doing a residency down there for, you know, quite a few weeks. And so, you know what, man? We were going to do things as such. We were going to play residencies. We were going to play special festivals. We were going to do, we were going to go back in and make another record. You know, we were going to do, you know, different things like that. And it wasn't that the band was just going to totally all of a sudden go, boom, that's it. We're never going to play again, because that's what we do. We make music and we play music. And you know, this is a famous story, but in an interview, and I'm sure y'all could look it up,
mm-hmm.
but I remember seeing an interview with Merle Haggard, and the girl goes, Merle, you know, you don't need to do this every year. You go out every year. You don't need to do it. We know you don't. And you'd just be at home enjoying your life. Da, 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 da. And you know what he said? He goes, you want to know why I do this? Because this is what I do.
Right.
I play music for a living. And I go out and I like to play and be on the road for the fans and make music. And that's the same thing that Skinner does and loves to do. We love to go out and be on the road and make music for the fans. And we always will.
Yeah, and the reason I asked about the farewell tour in particular is, you know, another one of my favorite Southern rock bands is the Allman Brothers. Right. And the Allman Brothers said, hey, there is a finality to it, and it's going to be in New York City. You know, we're going to do a string of shows. I want to say it was maybe 15, 16 shows they did. My wife and I flew up to see one of the final appearances. And then I believe, you know, within a year, Greg Allman died afterwards, right? So he clearly knew something was going on. And that's why I was asking about, you know, you guys with your farewell tour. I mean, obviously with Gary and his heart problems, that's documented. I didn't know if there was any internal discussion within the band of like, hey, man, doctor says I can do X, so we're going to play out the rest of these shows and then kind of end it at that point.
No, that wasn't it. That was not it. We just, you know what? Also, Gary and Johnny, I mean, Gary and Johnny, you know, they have big families. You know what I mean? And they, you know, they spend every, you know, we were spending every single solitary year, spring, summer, right into the fall, maybe sometimes into the winter. We were on the road playing.
That's something a lot of people don't understand about the entertainment industry is our big work season is usually when everybody else is on vacation. So finding that family time and time to reconnect with people can be difficult sometimes.
Right. Exactly. So there you go. That's what was, I mean, that's what kind of like made the band say, hey, we need to figure out something else. We need to figure out another way to go. And that's what we did. But now we got to figure out another way to go, because the only other way to go is hopefully is to get back out there and make up a lot of lost time and a lot of lost music.
Yeah. Look, you know, I, for one, can't wait until you guys get back out there. One of the best live shows ever. Skinner is one of the very best of all time.
It really is. I mean, there's like four generations of people alive right now that are fans of you guys. That's crazy.
And that can still play well, Dan. Like, that, there's the difference behind it, right? Yeah. Some of these guys, they're trotting out, and they just don't have it, man. They don't have the energy, the voice, anything else.
No, they're propped Skinner up. They're propped up like Joe Biden right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Rolling Stones still has it, man. Like, dude, Mick still runs full pace for 3 hours out there. I've never seen anything like
it. I don't know how he's doing it, to be honest. I think he might be a cyborg, to be honest. Like, the level of energy that man has right now is, it's kind of, it's fucked up. I mean, he's out of his mind. Go ahead.
I got to tell you, man, you know, Keith Richards is like one of my all-time favorites. Mm-hmm. You know, people always ask me, why Keith Richards? I go, look, the guy... Okay, granted, he's not the Eddie Van Halen, and he's not the, you know, the Eric Clapton or Hendrix or Jeff Beck or Jimmy Page or whatever.
Like the Yardbirds, basically, is what you just described. Right. People forget that band was like every great guitarist of that generation almost, except for you. But, exactly. Anyways.
Yeah, but look at all the iconic riffs that he's come up with that starts one of their songs. Mm-hmm. That from the time it comes on, you know who it is.
Right.
And that's Keith Richards.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Well, to me, you know, I just love Keith Richards. I've been a big fan for almost ever. And I got a theory about Keith, you know, and I hope people don't take this wrong, but this is my theory. I think that Keith passed away many, many years ago. And God just forgot to tell him.
or he was too stubborn to accept that.
Yeah. One day God's going to all of a sudden wake up and go, hey, wait a minute. I just ran across this guy, Keith Richards. I forgot to tell him. You know what I mean?
St. Peter's doing it. St. Peter's auditing heaven. He goes, wait a minute. We're missing a guy here. What the hell is going on?
They're missing two. I just saw Prince Philip get out of hospital this morning in 99. He looked like he was dead in the back seat.
He's looked like a vampire for 30 years, though. That guy.
Crazy. I tell you what, we're going to pivot out of the COVID bullshit and go back to the magical times. Because Dan and I have this running debate on the show of the best music came out of the 60s and 70s. I lean towards the 60s. Dan leans toward the 70s. You were in the heart of it all. what made that generation so special for music?
I'll tell you. I'll be real. I mean, I'll be honest with you and tell you. First of all, every song that can be written has been written today. There's no, you could put a brand new song out today and you'll listen to that song, and at some point, pardon me, in that song, you're going to go, wow, that sounded like,
right,
you know, or that guitar part sounded like. Everything back then was brand new. Like, all the chord structures had not been explored. All the riff writing hadn't been explored. All the lyric writing and the melodies and so forth and so on had not been explored. Right? So,
yeah.
What happened was, is bands were getting into it and writing and writing, and it was evolving and evolving. Out of three chords, and all of a sudden out of three chords it was four chords, out of five chords they used the whole spectrum, or in other words, it was virgin territory for rock and roll. It really was.
Yeah. Now it makes sense when you say it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you a good scenario. Think about this. If somebody come up to Lynyrd Skynyrd or me, or, you know, one of those bands back then, and go, okay, you know what? You had great songs with Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird. Write me another Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah, right.
Well, how are you gonna overkill a song that is as iconic as that? How are you gonna overkill Train Train? How are you going to overkill Freebird?
Mm-hmm.
You can't, you know, nowadays there is no such thing as a hit record anymore. There's a hit download, maybe. There's a hit, I don't know, streaming or whatever.
Right.
But for a DJ to get on the radio, put the record on and spin that record, and all of a sudden the phones light up and you know you've got a hit, they don't make that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's no question. So I mean, people listen to such a variety of music too. Like if a new in 1974, if a new Lynyrd Skynyrd album came out, pretty much everybody's looking forward to that. You know what I mean? These days.
Well,
you know,
think about something, guys. You had DJs that sat that set at the controls, and back then they would have like a premiere hour where they would premiere the, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd's you know, pronounced record. They right. would play the whole freaking record, and it would premiere the record. Then they would be, some of these stations would be 2 and 3, 4 songs deep into the record on their standard playlist. Well, next thing you know, corporations come along and buys up radio stations. And then they have consultants. And the consultants said, well, I think these people want to hear such and such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Their playlist is 20 songs long, and that's it. We got into this thing out of the 70s into the 80s. to where it stopped being a free form of rock. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That to me, you're right. The 60s and the 70s to me were just magical.
Well, our debate is whether the 60s or the 70s are better. I think the 70s are demonstrably better. It's Ross is just a big fan of the Rolling Stones, but I mean,
well,
there was such a much wider variety of music in the 1970s, like ABBA with Dancing Queen and the Jackson 5 and Blondie were big then. Eric Clapton was big with Layla. Bohemian Rhapsody came out in the 70s. I mean, all this stuff. Not that we haven't gotten into the rock yet. I mean, Fleetwood Mac with shit. They, I mean, all their hits, but Fleetwood Mac with Go Your Own Way. That's one of the best songs of all time.
Yeah.
There's so many great songs
just
in the 70s.
Guys. Just think, in the 60s, it was forming. all of a sudden, from the mid-60s right on through the ends, it was starting to form.
Right.
Okay, and by the time it hit the 70s, it was in full blossom.
Yeah, and you know, to that point, like, the reason why I say the 60s on our show is because it's like you said, Ricky, they were inventing things, right? So the Beatles were doing things that had never been done before. You know, the Stones were kind of doing stuff that hadn't been done before. Hendrix and those guys, and then it led into the 70s, obviously. Now, you were around for all of it. Who is the very best, but who, like, because you were there and we don't have that option, right? So I can't sit here and tell you who the very best is. You were living it as it was going on. Who's the best band of all time? Besides Skynyrd, right? Because you're in your own band, and you know, that it's probably, and obviously Blackfoot, of course, you were in. Who's the best band in your opinion? Looking at it now, all these years later, like, if you're looking back and they said, Ricky, gun to head, you gotta tell us who the best fucking band is of all time. Who is it?
Oh boy, that is a tough one. That's okay.
No pressure.
Well, it's not that it's pressure, because being in a band, being in two successful bands myself, I took a lot of influence from quite a few bands to make my own thing, you know, to do my own thing. You know, when I grew up in the 50s, understand, right before my seventh birthday, my parents, I was raised with my grandparents, and they adopted me and raised me. My granddaddy was a touring musician at the time, was on television on a local show that went out all over the Southeast. And when he wasn't on that, he was touring either with his own band or guys or pretty well-known musicians out of Nashville. So he was a busy man. But I ended up getting the chance because my dad knew people that had gotten to see Elvis, had gotten to see him at his hotel, to sell him a song they had written. And he got the song, lo and behold, recorded it later on, and it turned out to be Heartbreak Hotel.
Wow.
Well, they gave the lady, her name was Mae Atkins, and she gave my dad three tickets to the Florida Theater to see Elvis that night. And we went. Now, here I am, six in December, soon be seven in February, and I am in the middle of the theater, the Florida Theater, owner about, what, the third or fourth row, and out comes Elvis in a gold, you know, a gold lamé jacket, yeah, and black pants and black shirt. And I mean, the king was sitting right in, I mean, here I am sitting there, he's standing right in front of me, you know? And when we left that night, I remember my old man looked at me, you know, I'm in the middle of the seat between him and my mom. and he looks at me and he says, well, son, what did you think about that? And I went, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. You know, well, for a six-year-old kid, you know, your parents go, okay, you know, some parents will go, yeah, sure, okay, whatever, you know. My parents, being involved so heavy in music, they never shucked it off like that. So Elvis I saw in 64 in Jacksonville. I saw the Beatles when they came to the Gator Bowl. I was there. In 66, 67, I saw Hendrix at the Coliseum. Mm. I saw Cream. I saw Zeppelin. I saw all these great bands coming through Jacksonville. And it was such a heavy duty thing for me to see all these bands and see how great they were. And go buy their records and take all those influences in to make my own thing. So when you say, who was the greatest band?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I can honestly look at you and say, I don't know. And I can't really tell you. Because in my mind, freaking Hendrix was a freak of nature when I saw it. I couldn't get over the guy. I mean, there was some kind of magic about him that I went, what planet did this guy come from?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
But then when I saw Zeppelin, I was like, holy crap. These guys are just unbelievable, you know? And then when I saw Cream, I said the same thing. I mean, it was mind-blowing to me, you know? But I honestly can't look at you guys and honestly say that, you know, I have what I think is the greatest rock and roll band ever to come along. I don't know how to answer that. I'm at a loss for words. I could give you my, of course, I could give you my top five or my top six, you know, which I've just probably named, you know, along with, you know, Van Halen. But I couldn't tell you my very, very favorite band. I can't do that.
Well, since you brought up Van Halen, are you going to go David Lee Roth or are you going to go Sammy Hagar in that?
I like both, actually. I just think it's two different bands. So when people ask me that question, I always say I like both, but for different reasons. Like if I'm listening for I don't know what you would call it, like the power ballad style, obviously I'm going with not David Lee Roth, let's be real. If I'm going for the party, I'm going for David Lee Roth, let's be real about that, right?
So, I agree with that. I mean, I think that David, no doubt about it, was the ultimate showman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had the showmanship, and I think that David, that's what he thrived on. You know, being as far as a vocalist, everybody has said it, and I think he's even said it. He wasn't the greatest vocalist of all time, but boy, what a showman he was. Whereas Sammy, now you're talking about a great vocalist and an okay showman. You know what I mean? I mean, that's that to me, you're right. I agree with that. They were just two different bands.
Well, when you're talking about Van Halen, which one strikes you first, I guess?
The original.
There it is.
There was some kind of, boy, I got to tell you, when the first time, I mean, we, back in the day, Blackfoot, I mean, we opened a couple of times for him, and there was something raw and undisturbed about when they came out and when they came on. It just was just like unbelievable. And it really set me back watching them guys. And, right. You know what, one year at the NAMM show, Gary and I got a chance to take part in a jam that Michael Anthony was doing. And I got a chance to talk to Michael Anthony, and what a great guy to talk to. A real sweetheart of a guy. And I got to tell him how much I enjoyed playing in front of them guys and being on stage, you know, being able to share a stage with those guys. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. I can. It was just unbelievable. And watching Eddie, yeah. Oh, my God.
I was going to say, my uncle told me a story one time about, I think it was 79, right after they toured, after the album Van Halen, the self-titled album, came out. And he said he was standing in this big arena, and Eddie started playing Eruption, and people weren't even cheering because they didn't understand what the fuck was happening. Like, he was tearing it up so badly, and everybody's just like looking at each other like, it's like aliens had landed. They're like, are we really seeing this happen right now? This guy's going out of his mind.
Okay, I'll give you a story. In 1970, I would say 77, there used to be a place to play in Dallas called the Dallas Electric Ballroom. And a guy named Randy Shelton, who ran Stardate Productions. He was the guy that owned and ran it. And we got into town, the original Blackfoot got into town, and we were to play the next night. And I called Randy, said, you guys ought to come down. You guys ought to come down and see this band we got here called Van Halen. I said, okay. He says, you're not going to believe this band. I said, all right. So we went down and we got there and those guys came out and I was just like, holy crap, man. What is this guy on the guitar? What is he doing? Because he'd take a lead and he'd turn his back to the audience. He didn't want you to see how he was playing guitar. Then he'd turn around, play the rhythms and stuff like that. And then he'd turn around, play the leads. I was like, what is he doing? You know?
Yeah.
And it was mind blowing to me. I couldn't figure this out.
That's one of the, there's a parallel actually in the world of physics that we talked about with Neil deGrasse Tyson last week, where there were all these competing string theories, and a guy named Ed Witten came in and showed everybody they were talking about the same thing. It's like the best mathematicians in the world, and then this guy shows up and just takes them all to school. That feels like what Eruption was like in 1978.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
When you see the other guitarists out there in the universe turn their heads and look in on this guy when he's playing that song in particular, it's like, okay, they're watching, I should be watching. That's how it felt to a lot of people.
Well, I got to tell you, it was interesting because they went, and when they did that, David Lee Roth goes, ladies and gentlemen, the next guitar god.
That's awesome.
Right? Back then.
So they knew.
Huh?
They knew. Like, you guys all knew. He knew clearly. Yeah.
You automatically knew it. Eddie Van Halen, and I've said this before in interviews, Eddie reinvented the guitar. He came along at a time and totally reinvented the electric guitar. He really did. And then everybody wanted to be Eddie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to do the hammer-ons, and everybody wanted to do the Floyd Rose, and everybody wanted to, you know. Okay. But there would only be one Eddie Van Halen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was one of the saddest things that happened last year, actually, is losing Eddie. I mean, he's just such an incredible musician.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. All the fucking hair metal bands of the 80s and 90s, every one of them were playing his shit.
You know, trying.
I mean? We're trying, yeah. There were a couple that got close. I don't know if anybody ever did. I mean, it's a hard thing to quantify, to be honest. But
from the
creativity standpoint, I don't know if anybody's ever written a song like Eruption before.
Well, I saw... No, they haven't. No.
Not they got but commercial success. I mean, you could look at like Beck or Joe Satriani or somebody like that, right, that does that, right? But for a song to have commercial success in an actual band and be that great, I don't think anything like that's ever happened before.
Well, I tell you, I it was pretty interesting because I got to see David on his, you know, his solo, his very first solo tour, the Eat 'Em and Smile tour, you know, with Steve Vai.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, Steve Vai, he was damn great. Really was. On that tour, man, I mean, he was playing. Him and Billy Sheehan together was monstrous, you know?
We missed it. But, we missed all the good shit.
Yeah, we missed all the good shit, Ricky. That's why you're here today, to give us these stories, goddammit. We got fucking K-pop bands running around.
Yeah.
As women. Genderless K-pop bands is what we're stuck with. That's why we keep asking you all these questions, because fuck, we're jealous, Ricky.
That used to be a thing, by the way. When we were kids... You didn't grow up and start listening to the music that was out for kids. You grew up listening to what your parents listened to. You know what I mean? I don't think that's a thing anymore.
No.
No. No. No. I don't know too many people, too many parents that listen to hip hop, you know? But I got to tell you, man, you know, it's funny because I have a daughter and she is 29 years old, and she she's amazed at some of the stuff. I mean, she's, you know, her dad plays in an iconic, actually has played in two well-known bands. And, you know, she asked me stuff about, you know, music and my gal, even though she's a guitar player and has been in the music world all her life, pretty well much. And, you know, has sang with a lot of prominent people. You know, we talk about the 60s and the 70s. And, you know, now if you ask her what her favorite rock band is, I'm pretty well sure she would probably tell you Led Zeppelin. She loves, you know, she loves to listen to Zeppelin. And, but you know what, man, I feel very blessed and fortunate that I did come along at a time and was able to experience, you know, the things I experienced. And little did we know, I mean, this is the most interesting deal. Little did we know how fortunate, how blessed and fortunate that we really were at that time. We didn't know. And only till now, you know, since I've turned 50, I guess, that I'm able to look back and see it for what it is and realize, man, that, boy, I really had it made back then, you know?
Yeah, and that, it raises my curiosity. If there was anybody since you were 50, right? Let's just take it that age since you said it. Has there anybody since 50 that you've looked at their band and said, all right, that's a great band? Because I'm trying to think of it now. That's the last 20 years. You know, Pearl Jam, shit.
Well, for me, it's obviously Lamb of God. I think they're the best, I guess, 90s onward metal band of all time, because it's just been so consistent. They've got like 8 studio albums and they're covered in hits. But like heavy metal like that, death metal, or whatever you want to call it, isn't really there. It's become wider in time, but it's still kind of niche, right? It's not like Lynyrd Skynyrd, like I was saying earlier, every fucking body was waiting for that record to come out. Only maybe a tenth of the entire music consuming population is waiting for Lamb of God to come out, for example. You know what I mean? So it's just different. Like bands that actually play instruments aren't really getting that much play this year or this.
They're not at all. So is there any bands over the last 20 years that you've been like, all right, those guys are good?
You know, it's interesting. I actually liked Soundgarden. Because I thought the singer,
Chris Cornell, yeah, he's great.
I mean, the singer was, to me, was probably one of the best singers I had heard in a very long time. And then he went on to do, you know, out of Soundgarden, he went on to do another band, you know, the other bands that he's been involved with. And, you know, to me, Chris was just one of those unique individuals that had that voice that you could immediately recognize. And I remember we played a festival in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And there were two stages. And one stage would be here. And if you looked across the site over about, you know, 200 yards or so, the other big stage was set up. And I remember before we went on, all of a sudden the guy over there on the other stage introduces, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Cornell. And I went, say what, you know? And he walked out with an acoustic guitar right by himself in front of 88,000 people.
Jesus Christ.
And the guy sat down and he started to play all these songs that I'd heard him play with, you know, with Soundgarden and his other band. That the name slips me right now.
Temple of the Dog.
Well, that was the one they did with Pearl Jam. But there was the other band, guys, that Chris Cornell was in?
He took part of Rage Against the Machine and formed a band.
Yeah, it was the guitarist from Rage.
Who I'm talking.
Yep.
Huh?
Yeah, it was the guitarist from Rage. Who is it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Soundgarden, Audio Slave.
Audio Slave. There you go.
Yeah, Audio Slave. And the deal is, I heard Audio Slave and just, I loved it. You know, I mean, it was raw, it was heavy. And Chris Cornell's voice made the band. If it would have been maybe somebody else, then it wouldn't have been as great. Mm. But to me, it made the band. And my hat's off to him, man. I got to meet him and I got to talk to him. Sweetheart of a guy. And I was really saddened when he left here. I mean, wow, you know, gone too soon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of those in rock, obviously, and musicians in particular. Let me ask you this. Was there anybody that you despised working with or playing with over the years that you were on tour with and you were just like, man, I hate this fucking band?
Oh, boy. Talk about being put on the spot, man. That's interesting. You know what? I'm sure that there is. I'm sure there's quite a few of them. I'm sure almost, you know, back when Blackfoot was headlining and stuff, you know, we had a major run in with the band Crocus, if you can think back that far. And we had a major run in with them. We didn't like them guys too much. They didn't like us, but whatever the fuck. You know? But there, you know what, man, there hasn't been really anybody that I just despise and hate. You know, I think that's a pretty strong statement. And then if we despise somebody or we didn't like them, if they didn't like us, then, you know, come out in the parking lot, we'd settle the shit, you know? And, that's the way that's the way we always did it. You know, meet us behind the arena and we'll get this shit done, you know?
But did that ever happen? Did you go behind the arena with somebody?
No, they never wanted to contest that. No, they never wanted to meet the boys from West Side of Jacksonville. You know what I mean?
Since you were talking about your girl being a backup singer for Kid Rock, we did a show with Kid Rock a few months ago. Yeah. Great guy. We really, really enjoyed him. We're doing another event with him in Nashville in the fall as well. What were your thoughts when he wanted to use a Skynyrd song for All Summer Long?
Well, it was interesting because personally for me, I kind of heard about it haphazardly because at the time, we were being managed by Vector Management, and he was getting in with Vector. And I kind of heard about it that way, you know. And so we were at the bar in L.A. at the Sunset Marquee, the hotel. And we were getting ready to leave the Sunset Marquee, and Bob was there with our management and stuff like that, and they put the song on in the bar.
At the Sunset Marquee?
Right. It wasn't even out yet. And they put it on, and that's when I first heard it.
Wow.
And I mean, I was like, wow, this is interesting. It was a mixed match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Between Alabama and Werewolves of London. And yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, it was my hat's off to Bob, man. That was to me, it was pretty well ingenious how he did that and pull that off. You know what I mean? And think about it. It was a number one song all the way around the world at the same time. And that's pretty amazing to me. You know what I mean?
It but is. Yeah.
That's, look, 2008, we go on tour together, and that's how I met my gal. You know what I mean?
So, really?
Yes. Oh yeah, we what happened was is that it was approached Lynyrd Skynyrd and Kid Rock for a summer tour. And we did it, we got into it and by the third show, I'd met her and we had started going out and it all fell into place. And here we are going on about 13 years later and we're still together. So
so that song brought you and your lady together is what you're saying.
Pretty well much, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. You remember that movie Speed where at the end of it, they kind of jokingly said that, relationships often get started or whatever. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but through some kind of traumatic event. I think it goes the opposite of that as well. The inverse of that is true. A lot of not only like romantic relationships, but a lot of like just personal relationships in general with lifelong friends begin. It's some incredible thing. Like you might have sure. been, you might have been at that Eddie Van Halen or that Van Halen concert and saw Eddie play Eruption for the first time, and you and this dude you don't know look at each other like, what the fuck is happening? And then 10 minutes later you're getting a beer together, and then 25 years later you've been friends for 25 years.
Right. Well, it's kind of cool, man, because when she and I, you know, first started, you know, seeing each other, going together, and we were all on the road, we got to talking about, she wanted to hear old rock stories. And
all of them?
Well, she was like, yeah. I think she can kind of guess a lot of them, you know what I mean? But I was notorious for, you know, whatever. Anyway.
That was very diplomatic.
but here's what's interesting. This kind of sealed the deal, you know, with us seeing each other, because I found out that one of her favorite bands at the time with a favorite singer was the Staple Singers, because she's a very bluesy, gospely, she's got that raspy voice, man, that's that Bob, you know, really loves, and you know. And so I said, Staple Singers, I said, let me tell you a good story. She goes, okay. And this was the true deal. When we were in Muscle Shoals recording the record, I got invited by Jimmy Johnson, that was producing the record, to come and sit and watch a session. And it was on the day that the Staple Singers recorded I'll Take You There.
Wow.
And I was sitting in front of the console in that little recording studio of Muscle Shoals, Alabama, Muscle Shoals Sound, watching it all go down. And Stacy was like, you were there? And I went, yeah, I was right there. She goes, oh my God. You know, well, that sealed the deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was it. So, by the way, I'll Take You There, another song written in the 70s. Ross, get fucked.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm fine with it. Like, it's a onesie twosie Kobe Jordan type sitch. I'm okay with it. Since you brought up Muscle Shoals, I watched that doc, you know, about Muscle Shoals and that studio in particular that you're talking about. What I couldn't figure out was why Muscle Shoals. Like, again, I'm from Georgia. Like, that's a weird town, Muscle Shoals. Why was there such a collection of interesting artists recording there specifically?
Well, you got to understand what ended up happening in Muscle Shoals was that originally the Muscle Shoals Swampers, the rhythm section, started at Fame Studios. And a lot of your R&B artists were coming to Fame, you know, back in the day. Wilson Pickett and, you know, people like Aretha and all those artists like that were coming there to record. Percy Sledge, When a Man Loves a Woman, mm-hmm. had been recorded mm-hmm. there, and it was a hit song. And, you know, they were churning out at Fame. They were they were churning out some, you know, some hit songs. Well, Jerry Wexler, the head of Atlantic Records, he approached Jimmy and them about starting their own recording studio, and if they did, he would bring all the Atlantic artists to Muscle Shoals Sound to record records. Thus, you ended up, guess who was on Atlantic? Rolling Stones.
Right.
Aretha Franklin. Right?
Right.
Wilson Pickett. All those great, great artists. Then what happens? You get other artists such as Bob Seger looking at it. Then you got Rod Stewart looking at it. And all of a sudden, it just started to fall in place. And they were churning out hit after hit after hit.
Yeah, it was a factory. It's such a strange town in Alabama. I was like, man, why there out of all of those places? But obviously, when you talk about it, it makes sense.
It had a soulful, you know what, man? It's just like people ask me, what was it about Jacksonville? Of all these bands that come out of Jacksonville and had success, what was it about Jacksonville? Well, you could say the same thing about Muscle Shoals. What was it about Muscle Shoals? It was a time in history that was meant to be. It just happened. There's no figuring it out. It wasn't something, you know, that was calculated. It just happened. And all of a sudden it happened. A lot came out of it, and then it was gone. And, you know, just like Muscle Shoals had a run of success, the next thing you know, it's gone. California has the hair bands for years.
Yep.
Next thing you know, it's gone. Then the grunge comes in up in Seattle. They had a run, it's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Let me ask you this. We're just talking about the documentary and everything. Have you guys been approached as a biopic for Skinner and everything that's going on? Because, I mean, there's endless crazy stories and all of that. Has there ever been a producer that has approached you from Hollywood about doing a biopic on Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Yeah, but you know what, man? There's been so many documentaries made about Lynyrd Skynyrd that people thought they knew the story and, you know, got somebody to make it. Gary, Johnny and I participated in a documentary made about 3 years ago that I thought was right on it. It premiered on Showtime. And honestly, pardon me, Gary hadn't never been able to be in any of the documentaries. And here is one of the founding members.
Mm-hmm.
And it always used to really chap my ass that Gary had never been, nobody had ever called him, or even much less me, because I was there in the early years. Never called him, never called Johnny to participate, you know, in being a part of it. Finally, we were approached by this company to do this documentary for Showtime, and we did it.
Yeah, and by the way, so I love that documentary, and I know the one you're talking about on Showtime. I'm talking about a fully scripted film where actors are playing you guys, because that's a big fad right now.
Yeah.
The Aretha Franklin trailer just dropped last night during the Grammys, the full-length one for that.
Yeah. Dirt Bohemian came out like, Rhapsody. What, 2 years ago? Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, The Dirt on Netflix. Bohemian Rhapsody made $1 billion around the world. Has anybody approached you about a scripted one where actors play you guys?
Yeah. They've approached, Gary and their surviving family members. So far, nothing has ever came about. You know, Artemis had a movie that, you know, came out, what, last year? Telling his side of the story, you know, mm-hmm. about the plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so over plane crash stories. You know, everybody wants to go back and visit that and talk about that. And I'm just over that, you know, you know, and I'm sure Gary is. And, but you know what, it's one of those things that people want to know about and people's going to talk about and want to go back and visit. But for the most part of it, you know, Gary has been approached. And like I said, the surviving people of the families of Ronnie's family and Alan's family and, you know, Billy and Leon. And, you know, they have been approached, but nothing has ever come of it yet, you know?
Gotcha. And by the way, speaking of the plane crash, there's a reason why Dan and I neglected to ask you about it today. Dan's in the military. Mm-hmm. You know, the last thing you want to talk about is your friends dying over and over and over again. Yes. I've seen enough interviews with you personally and enough documentaries on Skinner that I'm, you know, we were all good on that. I don't need to ask you that one more time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. If you've been locked in for a year, the last thing is, hey man, you haven't seen your lady in a long time. Tell us about the plane crash. Like, we're not going to do that to you.
No, of course not.
You know what I'm saying? So, we passed on that today. I know some of the listeners, and the thing we're asking about it. I'm like, there's no reason. There's plenty of footage, from documentaries, that have asked that in the past. And,
right.
You know, truthfully, you're such an amazing storyteller and person that, you're plenty interesting enough that we don't need to rehash your friend's passing away. Now is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week away to, Ricky?
My grandfather, Shorty Medlock. Understand, guys, if it hadn't have been for my grandparents adopting me and raising me the way they did, I most likely probably wouldn't be sitting here today at 71 years old talking to you guys.
Right.
You know? He let me explore my capabilities. He saw something in me. He saw something in me that he wanted to let me go out and do for myself and explore. And if he could help me, great. And I'm forever grateful and thankful to both of them and him, especially, being the musician that he was much more. And I've always said this, he was far more talented, to me, far more talented than I ever will be. He could play almost every instrument of his genre. And not only could he play it, he played it great. And I wanted to emulate him, but he gave me some great advice early on. He said, don't try to do what I do. Do your own thing. Do what you do. And stick to one or two things and you'll be the better for it. Mm-hmm. Well, I did. I stuck to guitar and I played drums for a short time with Skinner and that was cool. But I stuck to guitar, I stuck to singing. And now I'm just, you know, I love to play guitar in one of the world's greatest rock and roll bands. And I love being there. But my grandfather would be my drinking bro because he was quite a fellow. And you know what did me a lot of good years later, when he was, you know, an older man, Blackfoot had a hit song with Train Train and he wrote the song. And, that was kind of a thing where I was able to repay him. for everything that he gave me and did for me, especially him and my ma. And you know what, man? I was a very blessed and fortunate guy to have them. And it was kind of funny, man. He saw us play. You know, he used to come and play with us in Blackfoot. He'd come out and be on stage with us. And I've got beautiful pictures of him with us in Blackfoot at the Fox Theater and playing on stage. But, you know, I remember one of the very first times he came to an arena and saw us play in front of a massive crowd. I think it was, we were opening for Ted Nugent at the time, back in the late 70s. And I remember he looked at me and he said, "Let me tell you something, boy." He said, "The day you came out of your mother's womb, God gave you an extra special kiss." And I never forgot that, you know? So he's my drinking bro of the day.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Yeah, and by the way, Blackfoot was amazing. Train, and Highway Song. Highway Song was my fave, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just a gigantic fan. This was a complete honor for us to have you on today. We really appreciate your time, and I can promise you this. When you guys are back on tour in stadiums where no one's wearing masks, I will bring my wife, and I will fuck her to Freebird. Until completion. Yeah. Okay. I will not pull out. I will not wear a condom. And that will be for you, Ricky. And you're gonna hear in the from the lawn seats me screaming out at the end.
Freebird
for you, Ricky. And just know that is me climaxing, and that is our special bond now that we're gonna take with us not only through this life, but the next, my man. And this was awesome today. So thank you for being here.
It was an honor to be here with you guys. It really was. And I thank you for inviting me. And I just wish the best for all of you guys. Many blessings to you. And be well. Stay well. And stay safe, man, because it's, I don't know, it's a real bitch out there still right now, you know. So we got to bully our way through it, man, and make it, you know.
I hear you, but I think you're gonna outlive both Dan and I.
Oh, so. Yeah, definitely me. If it's not all the dumb shit I do, it's gonna be some woman stabbing me in my sleep. So either way, I'm going.
Yeah, we're worried about leaving, you know, the world we're leaving behind for Ricky, not vice versa here. So we appreciate you being on. For D'Anthony Holloway, Ricky Medlock, man. I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.